Welcome to the Penny and Pops podcast. He's Spencer Penny Strode. I'm Adam Pops Papa Giorgio. No intro, just going to get into this. We're recording this Monday evening, March 25th. The Magic are 42 and 29. We are the fifth seed in the East as of this recording. We are four games back of the second seed Bucks, who are looking impressive because Giannis Antetokounmpo is going to finish top two in the MVP race, probably. And Doc Rivers' coaching tweaks are working. So for all the hate Doc was getting after his hiring and those early struggles, the Bucks look pretty scary right now. We're one game back of the third seed Cleveland Cavaliers. We're a half game behind the fourth seed Knicks. Pacers, Sixers, Heat are all on 32 losses as we speak. So essentially, we have kind of like a three-game gap between us and those that are six through eight seeds. So we basically got kind of like a three-game cushion from the play-in folks. But, you know, we're recording this before the 7 p.m. game start. You know, it's – I doubt the Hornets are going to win in Cleveland or the Pistons win in Madison Square Garden. Sixers might lose in Sacramento later on tonight. Pacers might lose at the Clippers. We'll see. But, again, we're 42 and 29. We're one game ahead of my 45-win prediction. Penny, what do we think these past few weeks, man? I mean, we've been racking up a lot of wins here. I know we've technically only gone 5-3 since we last recorded, but I mean, this is looking just overall post All-Star break. I mean, we're winning the games we should be winning, and you know, we're coming off a heartbreaking loss against the Kings, which we'll talk about. But I mean, overall, can't complain too much with where we're at when we're 13 games over 500 this late in the season.
No, not at all. It's been a fun stretch. Obviously, again, to your point, you want to take advantage of the, you know, the start of the 8-game homestand that we've had. But what, 7-3 in the last 10 or something like that?
Yeah, 7-3 in the last 10. Yeah,
just you know, keeping pace and also putting some distance between the teams behind us is always a good thing.
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously, we'd love to get home court advantage in the playoffs, but we've kind of got like one step in regards to ending up a top six seed, which was my ultimate goal going into the season. And they're exceeding my expectations, because right now the Magic are one game ahead of my 45 win projection. And the amazing news is I only have us going 4-7 these final 11 games. You know, including I have us losing to the Warriors this upcoming Wednesday, despite the Warriors playing terribly inside Kia Center these past few years. But look, it's a challenging schedule the rest of the way for the Magic. Like, you compare the Magic schedule to basically the other teams, like 3 through 8, I think the Magic have maybe the toughest schedule out of all those teams. So we're going to have to earn it the rest of the way here for sure. You know, we took care of business against some easy teams. You know, we got an awesome win against the Pelicans, followed by a really, really tough loss against the Kings, which we'll talk about those two games. But it's a challenging schedule the rest of the way. Like, a lot of playoff teams we're going to face. But my predictions the rest of the way are very conservative. And, you know, looking at that schedule, I think we can win more than four games the rest of the way. I mean, we've got we're halfway through this 8-game homestand right now. We've got these 3 days off, which we do terribly when we get 2 days or more off, but we've got 3 full days. And, you know, we're going to get the Warriors on the second night of a back-to-back here Wednesday, March 27th, because they'll be in Miami the night before on Tuesday. And then we have a home back-to-back Friday, March 29th against the Clippers, who they're going to get Russell Westbrook back, which sucks hard for us because he is a pain in the ass for us to deal with. Whether of late he was with the Lakers or now with the Clippers, like, Westbrook is a handful. And then tricky second night of a back-to-back against the Grizzlies, who I know the Grizzlies aren't much, but we lost to them in Memphis with a garbage roster. And so hopefully we won't take them easy, and hopefully we won't be too tired for that. And then we finished the 8-game homestand on a Monday, April 1st. So hopefully no April Fool's Day type results against the Blazers. And then we're on the road for what, 5 of the last 7 to end the season. That's not easy. You know, you get the Pelicans, very tough Pelicans team, Wednesday, April 3rd, then Friday, April 5th, we're at Charlotte, you always got to worry about the Steve Clifford revenge game. I know we just trucked the hell out of him here at home, but that's not going to be a gimme. You get Vooch and the Bulls Sunday, April 7th. A shitty back-to-back on the road, April 9th on a Tuesday. We're at Houston. And then 24 hours later, April 10th, Wednesday in Milwaukee. And then your last two games of the season are Friday, April 12th at Philly, who may or may not have Joel Embiid or not by then. And then fan appreciation night is our finale at home against the Milwaukee Bucks again, April 14th on a Sunday. So I have us going 4-7. We could go 4-7. It's very possible. Like, this is where having a young team and then thinking about kind of what they've accomplished so far this season and just having to deal with playing against good teams in potentially really high pressure situations, because there's still a lot of seeding jostling that's going on. Maybe that final week of the season, you know, maybe the Bucks won't care so much. Maybe Philly, you know, we'll be resting guys too, but Houston very well could catch Golden State in and surpass them for that 10th and final play-in spot in the West, you know? So, but ideally on paper, you're like, you'd like to win one of the Warriors or Clippers games. Obviously you want to win all of them, but ideally you'd like to really somehow find a way to beat Golden State, or the Clippers. You got to win that Memphis game here. That's two. You got to beat the Blazers on April 1st. That should be three. Pelicans, we'll call that a loss in New Orleans. You'd like to beat Charlotte on the road on the 5th. So that should be four right there. Bulls are fighting for playing positioning right now. So that's not an easy game. That's not an easy home game for us, but that should be a fifth win, I feel like. And then from there, at Houston, at Milwaukee, at Philly, home against Milwaukee, that's a complete crapshoot. But I don't know, what are your thoughts on kind of how this end of the season's looking like? Because we're on 42 wins. If you go 8-3, you're a 50-win team. If you go, what, 6-5? What'd I say? 4-7? Let me see if I can do math. 6-5, you're a 48-win team. 48 wins would be insane, and you're probably locking up, not probably, you're definitely locking up a top four seed, I feel like, with 48 wins. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask you, and I'm sure we'll get to it, but and there's more pods to come probably before the end of the regular
season. Yeah, we're going to definitely do at least one more before the end of the regular season.
If you had to guess right now, where do you think they finish? Because it's still a jumbled mess, right? I mean, there's a little bit of space, kind of 3-4, you know, the first two uncatchable, 3-4-5 kind of right there, and then 6 through 8, and then 9 and 10. Like, there's little clicks and packs, but anything could change. There's enough 11 games left, 12 games left for some teams that 3 is not out of the question. Maybe 7 or 8 isn't out of the question if you hit a skid here and kind of start looking ahead too much. Feels like top 5 is a fair bet based on the remaining schedule. New York's getting it together too, though. So,
and that's without Randall and Anunoby. Now, Anunoby could be out long term, and who knows with Randall? And Randall has kind of that choke job playoff feel to him, you know. But
have you been surprised by what they've gotten out of Precious Achiuwa? I mean, he stepped in and been a key cog since that acquisition. But and also, you know, there's going to be talk again about Thibodeau running players into the ground, as there always is, coming down the stretch here with people playing 47, 48 minutes a night. But I think the Magic and the Knicks jockeying for the 4-5, I think that comes down to the wire. The Philly game at the end of the year could be very, very interesting. There's a chance that, I mean, you could conceivably say the Magic might jump up to 3 and end up playing Philly at 6, which could be bad or good, depending on who's healthy and available for them come mid-April.
So. I think Philly doesn't go above 7. I think Philly ends up 7th or 8th. Like, I think in the Pacers and the Heat finish above Philly, like, especially with no Embiid in sight. Like, And even without Embiid, like it's not a very easy finish for Philly the rest of the way. It's slightly easier than us, I believe, but
the permutations and combinations are going to be fascinating, because not only are you, I mean, you're playing to win now, certainly, but the last couple games of the year, it's time for the Magic also to focus on who they would prefer to play. So if you're talking about the Philly game at the end of the year and finishing with Milwaukee, who knows who they'll be playing, but it might be kind of rolling out the same zombie crew that we had for game 82 last season. Just you're trying to kind of slot yourself in where you think you'll have the most success in the playoffs too.
Well, and that's the other thing now, is the whole slotting seeds thing, because honestly, the Bucks are just as scary as the Celtics to me. Like, they're both going to be scary either way. So there's no point in trying to duck anybody at this point. Like, finish as high as you can. If that's third, or, you know, if that's third, then you end up avoiding the Celtics if you make the second round, but you're still facing against the Bucks, which, I mean, I would still prefer to go up against the Bucks than the Celtics, just because just the Celtics healthy just can hurt you more than Milwaukee, who has a very strong formula, and there's going to be some Doc demons that everyone's going to be talking about. No matter how amazing Giannis Antetokounmpo is, like, it seems like Chris Middleton might finally be healthy again, which that's scary. And Dame Lillard's still Dame Lillard. Like, that's a clutch motherfucker you don't want to deal with, you know?
Yeah.
Look, this season, it's all bonus. Like, this is the most exciting season we've had in a long time. Like, this is more exciting than even 18-19 at this point, because we're finishing the season even stronger than, I mean, or well, we're going to be a much higher seed than that Magic team was. Cause, you know, it was great at the end that we finished 42-40, you know, on a heater, but this team
this is the best team that we've had, regardless of, you know, two previous playoff teams in the last iteration that we've had since what, 2011, 2012. So,
well, and I would say more, I mean, we're looking at 09-10, honestly, because even like, I guess 2010, 2011. Yeah, you're right, because we thought we had some momentum going in, and then the Hawks just fucking obliterate us because Mike Bianchi just pissed them off in the paper. But
so quick, yeah. Very quick pulse check for you, because my answer, I think, remains unchanged. Regardless of final seeding, are you expecting the Magic to win the first round series if they have home court advantage? And what constitutes a successful year? Is there anything now in the playoffs that could happen that would dampen this year in spite of all of the success and accomplishment to this point?
I have zero expectation for the playoffs. Like, if we go up against the Heat or the Knicks and we get swept, I mean, it's going to hurt like hell, but honestly, like, it's just going to be lessons learned, and you're going to have a really, really good idea of what you got to do in the off season. You know? I mean, either way, you're going to have a really great idea of what this team needs to do in the off season. And the great thing is we're going to have the assets and the money to be able to fill a lot of holes one way or another. But yeah, I mean, there's people that are talking about, like, hey, you know, I don't want the Heat or the Knicks because it's more likely they'll upset us in the first round. You know, with the Knicks, it's more about worrying about all the Knicks fans that are going to be in Kia Center. And then with the Heat, it's the zombie Heat. It's Spoelstra, Butler, Bam Adebayo, you know, and you're going to have a bunch of bandwagon-ass Heat fans in our building. What I would say is there's going to be a lot of Magic fans at these road games, and I'm hoping you and I are going to be at some of these road games during this postseason too. But don't duck good teams, man. You got to play them one way or another, whether you make it to the second round or not. Like, to be better, you got to face great teams. And I'd much prefer, you know, going up against the Heat and the Knicks, perceived great teams, as opposed to the Pacers or even the Cavs, because the Cavs, they're in trouble. And apparently Donovan Mitchell may not be healthy enough in the first round. I know he's set to return soon, I think, but there's some folks saying that he's going to need an offseason to be fully healthy again. So there's an opportunity to take out the Cavs. The Pacers, there's a lot of weaknesses there. I was fucking right about the Siakam trade not being that amazing as it was. Now, Haliburton being on one good leg, and he's looked better of late, but he's still missing a shit ton of threes. Even worse than Franz from 3-point range is Halliburton, you know. But I'd rather face the Heat and or Knicks and beat them than face the Cavs and the Pacers, because I feel like we're going to learn more. And honestly, if we win those first round series against the Heat or the Knicks, then it's going to feel a lot sweeter than beating a Cavs or Pacers team, in my mind. Look, with this Magic team, like, if this Magic team finishes the regular season as a top six seed, like, that was my goal going into the season, like, with my prediction and everything. I said 45 wins, you get the sixth seed, you get the Southeast Division crown. It's looking pretty good right now at the moment. And the closest past Magic team comparison I have for them is the 93-94 Magic. Like, do you have a better comparison, Penny? Because likely we're going to end up with more wins and a higher seed than any Tracy McGrady team ever. More wins than the early Dwight Howard teams. Like, this is the bit closest comparison I have, where we got all these guys that are going to their first playoff series with no experience. And yeah, that team got swept 3-0 by the Pacers, but guess what? They learned really quickly and really hard from that, because you end up being the Pacers again in the Eastern Conference Finals in 7 games. And all we did was bring in Horace Grant, basically, to shore up the team. And this is kind of a similar offseason opportunity, where however far we go, whether we get swept by in 4 games, you know, one way or another, you got to get Paolo and Franz that playoff experience. And it looks like we're going to get it one way or another. If you win the first round series, that's fucking amazing. If you don't, we still learn a lot, and you know what you got to do in the offseason. Yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts on any of that?
No, I think that's the closest that we're gonna get, and I think that's a great parallel. I wasn't even thinking any Orlando Magic team really fit the bill, but the one that stuck out in my head was Oklahoma City, the 08-09 team, went 23-59. Next year they come in, win 50 games, bow out in the first round. And then obviously, you know, the year after end up making it all the way to the finals. So to me, it kind of felt like that ascension, where it's just like we're rocketing, we're skipping steps in a sense, and on that pathway of kind of rocketing, you know, I guess in the same way 93, 94, 94, 95, but
What's playoff success look like
incredible.
to you? Like, what,
Yeah, I mean,
like, honestly, like, I will deem it a success even if we win like 2 games. Like, I don't want to be in a situation where we win game one and get knocked out, you know, in a
Right.
douchebag sweep or something. You know, it's one of those where, like, if we, you know, I ideally would like to at least win 2 games. I would, and I feel like we definitely can. But, you know, and the coaching staff needs all this experience. Like, everybody needs this experience. Like, we only got like Joe Ingles and Gary Harris with like legitimate playoff experience on this team. Like, that's about it. And Gary, not even so much. So,
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, I
every
mean,
game
what's your
is
what?
another game to add to the belt, right? Like, but playing in a 7-game series is markedly more valuable than playing in a 4-game series. Playoff success to me was 2 wins. Like, even if we're the 4 seed, even if we're the 3 seed, this will change on the pod that we record in preparation for that series, but
Yeah.
I'm not expecting us to win a first round series this year. I mean, there's flaws on this team that will be exposed in playoff basketball, but I think a sweep would be disappointing. It still wouldn't undo anything that happened this year in terms of skipping that step of being a play-in team and being a playoff team. But to me, I think 2 wins is kind of the high water mark, and then you can kind of plant that flag that says, okay, the rebuild has now surpassed the previous iteration of the team, and speaks to, you know, the continued success in the long term.
All right, so we've gone 5-3 since we last did a pod, including that 5-game winning streak. I mean, we've been solid at home this month of March. Go back, you know, March 8th and the 10th, real quick. You know, the Magic, they played awful against the Knicks in Madison Square Garden, and then bad again at home against the Pacers. We gave away the 4th seed from there, and we've been kind of trying to like hunt it down here and there, and in doing so, now we're in range of the 3rd seed. But look, whenever the contract extension talks happen for Jalen Suggs, he can point to the Knicks game and this and that Pistons game or that Pacers game for negotiation leverage. You know, And then especially that Pacers game, like we were really just, we played like the Pacers aren't the Wizards or the Pistons, you know. We played so bad during that Pacers game for way too long, and Mosley let Rick Carlisle dictate the officiating in that game, and that was just a learning lesson. And look, it's an 82-game season. It's a young team. You're gonna have stretches like this where, you know, you're just gonna roller coaster like crazy. But and then the Magic, they announced that Jamal Mosley got a 4-year contract extension, which takes him now through the 2027-2028 season. Let's talk about the extension. I'm not surprised that this happened. Nobody should be surprised considering we've gone from 22 to 34 wins, and from 34 wins to we could go as high as 50, you know, in that short of a time span. And look, there's still a lot of nitpicking that I have with Mosley, like, and he's going to have to learn a lot in the playoffs, and I hope he learns a lot in the playoffs, but this team loves him, and people and players around the league love him. Like Jamal Mosley is a recruiting asset at this point too. We have to figure out if there's gonna be a cap or a max or a ceiling to him as a playoff coach, but we don't have to worry about that right now. The contract extension was just an easy decision to make, and I'm glad this didn't end up being a Rob Hennigan, Jacques Vaughn situation. Thoughts, Penny?
Yeah, a couple. First of all, would love to know what the annual salary is, as we've
Same, because he
seen.
was one of the cheapest head coaches, and
Yeah.
I hope, I mean, the number wasn't announced, so I'm assuming it's not like Monty Williams, Popovich, Spoelstra territory. I highly doubt it's anywhere near that, but it should be a nice pay bump. We'll leave it at that.
I would imagine so. Two points that I had on that extension. The first one is, obviously, there was some, chatter from fans about why we're doing this in spite of all of the success and the, continued progress each year. Correct me if I'm wrong, but he was essentially a lame duck coach. I mean, his contract expires at the end of the season, so you're going to do something at the end of the year, no matter what. And it was probably just a matter of determining how many years for the extension, and then based on the success this year, you go ahead and lock him up long term. And as a result of that contract extension, here's the interesting thing for me. If he fulfills the contract, he will be the longest tenured coach in franchise history.
He would. He that would, which would be insane. Van Gundy has the record, right, for consecutive games. Does
Van Gundy 5 in a row, and then Brian Hill 5.5 over 2 stints.
yeah.
So we played the game when he was hired, and I don't know where we fell on that. I feel like we thought he might have a shorter tenure than Jacques Vaughn, so
I
let's
went
play
under, I
the
think.
game
I'm pretty
now.
sure I went under when this initially happened. So I'm glad
Will
that didn't happen. Obviously, we're glad, but
Mosley fulfill the entirety of this extension?
oh man. Oh God. I'm gonna be optimistic and say yes, but this is gonna be a much bigger question for like 10 months from now or something. After,
It'll be interesting. If he does, he will undisputedly, which is crazy to say, be both the winningest coach in franchise history and unequivocally the best coach in franchise history, regardless of if there's a title or not. If he stays,
I don't know about, I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go that
yeah.
far. You gotta win the title, I feel like. Like the bar for Van Gundy is very high to catch him. Because it wasn't Stan's fault that he got fired in 5 years, which is insane for the success and just how great Stan was, that it was literally a 5-year stint. It feels like it was longer, and it really
Yeah.
wasn't. It was a 5-year stint, but because I mean he came in after Brian Hill's second stint, and he just elevated that team so quickly. Obviously, it helped having Rashard Lewis come in and a few nice other moves that were made by Otis and gang at that point. But yeah, it's I think you're right though. I think if Mosley makes it the distance, I think it's gonna be because we've won a title. I really think so, if he makes it through. So yeah, I'll be optimistic. I'll say he goes over. What about you?
I think so. I also think, and want to get your thoughts on this, but not only with the salaries that we're seeing coaches get now, you know, in line with obviously the player salaries increasing too, but it does seem like the pendulum is swinging back to the importance of a coach, the sustainability of front office, you know, like longevity and culture building and everything. There seems to be outside of poor Adrian Griffin this year, I'm going to say a little more leniency in terms of keeping people together. You know, you look at Mike Malone getting all the time in Denver to get things right. Like the hair trigger doesn't seem to be as fast as it had been maybe in the last decade or so.
I think you're right. Yeah, that's a very good point. All right. So after those two losses, the Magic needed those 2 days off really badly to rest and prep for the Nets to come to town. We got Suggs and Fultz back. So that meant Suggs and Gary Harris were starting, which is what we've been going through every time these guys have been healthy, is just a Suggs Gary starting backcourt with Franz, Paolo, and Wendell at the largest positions. And then we're really of late been starting to see Jonathan Isaac get center minutes, which he did in this Nets game. We just took care of business against the Nets in that game. Paolo had that great quote after the game where he said, quote, "It's not Cancun on three. Like coach said, we're actually playing for something," unquote. So pretty solid on that. And then for a few days around that time, we started seeing the think pieces and just kind of national pods dropping about how the league scoring has been down since around the All-Star break. You know, refs have been cracking down on offensive players, foul hunting. And I think this helps us long-term. We're not a flailing type of team. I mean, the only guy that flops really is Mo Wagner for charges. And, you know, that I'd say we're low off out of the, if you look at the top 30, all 30 teams in the league, we're probably like bottom 5, 10 or bottom 10 as far as like flailing, complaining, flopping goes, I would say. But I think this is going to help us long term. Like, we're a top 5 defensive team, and I mean, scoring has dropped a little bit. Like Franz, because he hasn't been able to hit threes, has gone from like a 20 point per game score down to like 18, 19, which that's fine. That's fine. You know, Paolo's still been hovering around 23 points. I don't know. What do you think? Or am I looking at this wrong? Or do you think overall, like in the playoffs, who knows, man? Because we're the inexperienced team. Like, these refs might not call anything in our favor, but we're still a high volume free throw shooting team.
Yeah, well, the other thing of note on the Franz thing, interesting Orlando Magic Pod Squad episode where they basically talked about, you know, his greatest strength is kind of avoiding and eluding contact and slithering and finding a Euro step path to the rim, whereas, you know, Paolo's greatest strength is absorbing and seeking contact to get to the line. So, kind of fun conversation there about him, you know, maybe working outside of what his normal MO is in terms of seeking more contact. But you can't argue with the numbers post All-Star break. And if anything, I do think it kind of sets the precedent and kind of the mental and emotional expectation of not looking over your shoulder and expecting a call or hoping for a call in ways that maybe they started to as the year crept along prior to, you know, February, March.
Yeah, I mean, look, the biggest examples were those two losses against the Knicks and the Pacers. Now, there were other circumstances to that. I just thought we didn't play well in general, but that's the kind of officiating to expect, and that's kind of the type of officiating that we're going to get, and better to experience it now than in a postseason, which we're going to experience in the postseason, but this is all about gaining that experience and those reps of playing in like meaningful games and high pressure games. And so we're seeing some guys make mistakes, but we're seeing us also kind of just find success during this time. And that's how you grow. That's how you get better when you got such a good young team there. So we would then beat the Raptors twice, once up in Toronto and then down here to start the 8-game homestand. You know, the Raptors, they were without Barnes, Barrett, and Poeltl. We just got the job done, you know, with the start of that 8-game homestand, which this 8-game homestand that we're in the middle of still right now, in it's tied for the longest in franchise history with a March through April of 2000. season, which that was the Harden Hustle team, which that Magic team went 7-1 on that homestand in the year 2000. And then they finished the season 2-4 after that homestand to barely miss the playoffs, which was the most gut-wrenching thing ever because that team was literally predicted to win 10 games. They finished the season 41-41, and it still wasn't good enough to make the playoffs, which in any other year in the East, I feel like would have gotten them in, and it just didn't happen. But maybe we could see some correlation with that because of how tough the rest of the schedule is coming, you know, after that last home game against the Blazers. April 1st during that this 8-game homestand, like it's going to be tough, but obviously there's no threat of us missing the playoffs, but just interesting to see that. So all right, we got to talk about the jersey swap, because the Anthony Black Grady Dick jersey swap I thought was hilarious. And I mean, both Grady Dick and Anthony Black, they just could not stop giggling during the whole thing. And, it even started like right afterwards, where basically Grady Dick can clearly be seen mouthing fuck it. And Black, as he's giggling towards Tony, the Magic photographer, to get photos and stuff like this. It was hilarious. David Steele being the ultimate professional during that, because he knew what was going on. I don't know if the truck people knew exactly what was going on immediately, but David and Jeff clearly knew. So they handled that very professionally. And then I don't know who's to blame, the DeVos family, Adam Silver, the PR Magic squad, the PR Magic folks, you know, Joel and George or Trish, I don't know, but the social media post got scrubbed from the media accounts, which you just lost out on media impressions and views anyway. Like it's been floating around by everyone else since then. So I thought it was great. I'm not shocked that they took it down, but it's just funny that one, it took them a while to do that. And then it's like, the damage is already done. And they made Bally Sports take down the videos and the photos too. So any thoughts on the Grady Dick or the Dick or the Black Dick jersey swap, Penny?
I thought it was funny. I think it's also a reminder that they are, you know, what, 19, 20 year old kids that make a lot of money and are on the internet. So I'm not surprised that it was taken down. I would also not be surprised if there are more dick swaps in the future.
Yeah, this could also be why Anthony Black hasn't seen the floor much since then, potentially. But yeah, we can talk about that in a bit here. But and then after that, we trucked the Hornets at home, just destroyed them. We now have a play the song electronic button now on the floor after victories.
You like it?
Admiral Schofield pressed it. So he's the first guy to actually inaugurate the button, I guess. And that the Magic had clinched a play-in spot with that victory, which we're not going for play-in. We're going for a top six seed. But I don't like it. I feel like we could have done something better than just like a touch screen, basically. And it's very Sacramento Kings copycat type stuff. Yeah. It needs to be like an actual button instead of like a tablet. I mean, it's not a tablet. It's like it's a floor screen basically. I mean, it's a touch screen that they roll out on the floor. I don't like hate it, but I'm not excited about it. And they just, the PR folks gotta be, and the marketing folks gotta be just really careful not to take something that's fun and just force it down the players' throats. Like Schofield and Suggs have hit the button. They've been excited. Like, that's fine. I feel like we got to do something better than a touchscreen. I don't know your thoughts.
Yeah, it feels a little contrived and forced for something that feels like it started much more organic. In looking into the future, do you think they go back to the original version after the 35-year anniversary update moving forward, or do they keep this one?
The original song, you mean?
Yeah. Do we revert back to the original?
I hope so. I mean, like it should be the original song, but
I think there's a lot of teams also that do the post game interview on the court, like broadcast over the PA, which the Magic traditionally have not done for the entirety of the franchise. So, I mean, it's a change. You know, I'm resistant to change. But it's also, I guess, the way of the league that every team is going to try and shoehorn in on something that they do when they win at home. So I thought it was organic and fun, and it's certainly fun, on Twitter and TikTok and everywhere else with the memes and the song together. But to transition it into the arena, I don't know if I love the button, but we'll see how they do moving forward.
All right, these last two games now. So Thursday, 121-106 win over the Pelicans. It was Zion versus Paolo coming in. NBA TV game because of the it wasn't on TNT because they got the March Madness NCAA tournament. Brandon Ingram, CJ McCollum, Jonas Valanciunas were giving us problems early. A mic'd up Jonathan Isaac swung this game early on in the first period. Like Isaac and Fultz, I thought were pretty big in creating a 16-2 run, which tied the game at 30-30 during that stretch. A hot Cole Anthony put the Magic up 47-36. So, I mean, just a huge swing from how the game started initially. And then Caleb started for Gary Harris in the second half. Gary's been dealing with a sore right foot. And then, of course, Houston would eventually get hurt too in the Kings game the next night. But you had Jalen Suggs who posterized Valanciunas in what was at that point already a chippy and physical game, just a really clean poster on the big Lithuanian. And then Brandon Ingram in the third, he hyperextended his left knee and he was definitely done for the night. It looks like he might be back for the playoffs for the Pelicans. I don't know if we'll see him when we were in New Orleans in a few weeks or not, but yeah, it was a rough hyperextension. I thought we were going to beat them either way. And honestly, I thought when Trey Murphy came in for Ingram, I thought they played better with Trey Murphy because they cut the lead to single digits there for a few times. But yeah. And then Zion Williamson really frustrated the shit out of him. All he could do was throw elbows at us. If he couldn't jump over what our guys, he was just throwing elbows and getting away with them for the most part. Paolo got a triple double late in the third quarter, his second career triple double. J.I. had then like this big baseline put back lefty slam that put us up 95-75 entering the fourth. Just really impressive second and third quarters for the Magic. Zion kept elbowing our guys in the face in the fourth and kept getting away with it, unfortunately. I was very pissed off with that. Like, it wasn't just a shoulder. He was throwing elbows and getting away with it for the most part. And then the Magic went up 107-87 on an early dagger Franz alley-oop fast break dunk feed to Paolo. That was just gorgeous and really put it away early. And yeah, everyone got to celebrate. That was a statement win for us. It got us to our 42 wins, which that's the most we've had since the Vooch era, basically, since we went 42-40 back in 2019. Yeah, I mean, Penny, what type of thoughts you got there?
Yeah, I thought it was a very professional game by Paolo and a very professional win, and the start of a great week by J.I. The parting thought that I had from that game is how much money would it take for you to step in and take a charge on Zion Williamson?
I probably do it for 10K. Is that too low?
I mean, it depends. The one that Mo took, the second one that Mo took was I think the most daring thing that a Magic player has done in a while.
Yeah, was that the one that they challenged or and it
Yeah.
didn't that's funny because I actually thought they'd win the challenge on that. I'm glad they didn't because I did think Mo was moving, but yeah, thankfully they didn't overturn that. But considering how many elbows he'd thrown at that point, he Zion didn't deserve that to be overturned. But yeah, any other thoughts on this Pelicans game?
The other thing I think was just I mean, you talked about the significance of it being, a milestone win in terms of our evolution in this era. The other thing is it was a fun win for the fans too. Like we hadn't played a good team in a little bit, so it was nice to get a win over a team that probably more closely mirrors our skill level and trajectory.
All right, we got to do the Kings Magic game. So I saw a good portion of this actually at the Orlando City match, which thank God Orlando City won against Houston, against Austin, Texas. We finally, our first win of the season. We badly needed that. But I watched a good portion of the first half on my phone. Surprisingly, I had awesome signal in there, which was kind of surprising. And then I saw the majority of the fourth through the finish, basically. So, and then I rewatched highlights and stuff afterwards. So, but I saw what I needed to see basically throughout this game. But look, we were looking for revenge going into this game against the Kings for both last season's De'Aaron Fox miracle game winner. And then, and that was here in Orlando last year. And then we had that double overtime loss in Sacramento when we were shorthanded and Paolo almost won the game by himself. That one sucks. And, you know, Gary Harris was out due to that right plantar fascia strain. Caleb started. This was the first time we rolled out this new starting lineup where it was Suggs, Caleb, Franz, Paolo, and Wendell. Got off to a shitty start. Isaac erased Sacramento's lead on his own with 10 quick bench points. Isaac at one point had like 17 points in 6 to 7 minutes on the floor, which was pretty insane. Interesting timing with Tracy McGrady being in the building for him to just go off on like that, coming off the bench offensively. And we were up two at halftime. Sabonis was well on his way to a triple-double. He's on this historical double-double streak, which probably was fueled a lot, too, by him not making the All-Star team. He should make an All-NBA team, should Sabonis. But Caleb Houston got hurt. He was out the rest of the game with a sore left ankle, or at least I hope so. I hope he wasn't placing bets on the under on himself or something. But, yeah, Caleb was out with a sore left ankle. And then Cole started the second half, which I thought was a mistake, and we can talk about that here in a bit, but I didn't think it worked out because Cole doesn't have just the size or just the defensive ability to really be a great perimeter defender. And the Kings hit a lot of threes on us, and then we didn't, and we went on a cold spell. I thought Anthony Black not playing at all with us being short on guards in general was interesting. I don't know what we're trying to pull there. Because I think Anthony Black would be is very important to our team, honestly, for this end of the regular season and then going into a playoff series with what he can do defensively as a gigantic 6'6" rookie, and then he's willing to shoot threes, and Markelle Fultz isn't. And he's actually Anthony Black's been making threes, not in a high volume, but he's been making threes, and we'll see how that fares coming up these next few games, but. Yeah, the Kings had gone on a 16-0 run, and then we just came storming back again, fueled by Jonathan Isaac. Like, his plus-minus was insane. And to tie it at 74-74, and then it was 81-81 going to the fourth. Isaac, yeah, I mean, what were your thoughts with this game at this point going into the fourth, Penny? Because you probably watched this live in comparison, or the vast majority of this live in comparison to me.
Well, first of all, the Isaac performance was incredible. Certainly, a career performance. So you're not expecting that up to that point.
Yeah, he tied his career high of 25 points in this game. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, going into the fourth, I think hopeful. I thought there were a ton of chances for the Magic to kind of wilt. And I was very impressed that they continued to, you know, claw back from the 3, 5, 6, 7 point deficit by making timely shots, possession after possession, and keeping pace with a really potent Kings offensive team.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, honestly, because we easily could have wilted and we didn't. We clawed back, especially with Isaac in at center to close for us, basically. I think he came in at center when we were down 99-94. And then at some point, we go on like the 6-0 run to tie it. And then we had the foul controversy on Suggs that sent De'Aaron Fox to the line, which I thought that Suggs foul on Fox was quite weak. The ref waited 3 seconds to call it only when Fox basically gave himself up by stepping over the half court line. So instead of like a backcourt violation, he got a foul. The last 2 minute report after the game said it was a good call, which of course the league said that. Look, Suggs nudges him, Fox, at the waist pretty noticeably, but I don't like it when the refs waits 3 seconds to then call it. Like, either call it then or don't call, especially since the refs have been a lot stricter, and I mean they've been letting a lot of physicality go. And I was disappointed that that happened, obviously, and it was a huge swing in the game. Thoughts on that play, Penny?
I mean, incredibly frustrating, and by all, you know, all intents and purposes, is the difference between a win and a loss that call was made, because otherwise it's, you know, backcourt violation, Magic have the ball. So trying to look through an objective lens, the push making him make a backcourt, you know, step into the backcourt, takes that contact from marginal to illegal. So, like,
right,
you know, by the letter of the law, I get it. The optics are really bad, especially when there's that big delay involved. And then anecdotally, you know, I've been playing in games where I've gotten pushed out of bounds, and there's no call made in those types of situations. So that's kind of a pisser too. It's reminiscent of like playing ball at the YMCA with the old guy who gets a hand on his hip and then just picks up the ball and starts walking to call his own foul. Like, I mean, there's always contact, right? And he certainly, he got him, he nudged him, but man, is it tough to make that call and have it go against you at that point in the game.
I just feel like if the roles are reversed and it sucks getting nudged by Fox, that's a backcourt violation, King's ball. That's the thing. That's my viewpoint on that. So
and that 2 minute report would say that it was the correct non-call too. So, you know, like
it would have said marginal, right? It would have said marginal. Yeah. So Eustis, Florida native Keon Ellis had a phenomenal game on both ends of the floor for the Kings. He was their X factor for sure. He had a career high 19 points for the Kings. He's an undrafted guy. He's blossoming in his second two-way season with the Kings. And I mean, it's a heck of a story with them. He's been awesome with, I think the Kings are like 8-1 when he starts, and he's just gotten all the Kevin Huerter minutes and then some, and that's a hell of a pickup, which kind of makes me wonder if there's a chance Kevon Harris gets brought back up and takes Fultz's minutes, either towards the end of the season or for the playoffs, but we'll see how that goes. But, I mean, we're still down one in this situation after Fox hit the free throws, right? Like, and then we had that sequence where Cole missed a great three. We get the loose ball. Franz short-armed a slightly rushed deep three. We foul the Kings. Ellis splits the pair. We're down two with 2 seconds left. I know before that, you know, we had Cole make that shot that cut it to one, I believe, with 27 seconds left. But, I mean, look. Ellis split the pair. We're down two with the ball, 2 seconds left. It wasn't a great final play. Like, it was smart of Mike Brown to have Alex Len guard Joe Ingles's inbounds pass, but Paolo catching the ball well behind the 3-point line with his back to the basket, that's just not an ideal situation. It stood no chance of that going in. Like, the kids made some crazy clutch shots and great shots, but that was just tough to overcome.
Yeah.
I don't know why we didn't try and put Powell in the corner and do like a Paolo Pistons baseline fadeaway again. Like, because if you put Paolo in the corner, I think you open up the floor for someone to spring open at the top of the key, be it like a Franz or a Cole. And it's just another heartbreaking loss to the Kings. And we got to stew on this now for 3 full days off now before the Warriors come to town. You know, that 2 minute report did say that Cole's driving, finish with 27 seconds left should have been an and one. So instead of being up one, instead of being up one, we could have been up two, which that changes everything in that instance. Anthony Black not playing in this game, in hindsight, I thought just looked bad when you could have used his size and defense very badly against guys like, even if it's not De'Aaron Fox, like, you know, Keon Ellis, like that would have been big. So, let's talk point guards here. Cause Do you think Anthony Black should be getting more time right now, Penny? And if so, for who?
Well, I mean,
the answer is obvious, but I'm just laying it out there on a silver platter for you.
If you're cutting into point guard minutes, you're cutting into to Fultz time. And I think the thing about, should he be getting minutes? Yeah, probably. But is he going to get minutes in the playoffs? And the answer is no, like barring injury. I don't think he will. And does he have a skill set that might be helpful in the playoffs? Yeah, maybe. Situationally, but those situations really get distilled down. So
do you think Fultz gets playoff minutes then? If Black doesn't get played, then Fultz doesn't get playoff minutes. So you're saying Mosley's cutting the rotation down and those guys are out right now?
No, I think Fultz is going to be the primary backup point guard in the playoffs. I mean, I would imagine the Magic are still going to end up playing nine guys in the playoffs. But the Fultz thing is crazy to me, because it doesn't appear to just be the shot right now. Like the inconsistency from game to game is expanding to other facets. So my presumption is that the only thing is you keep rolling him out there in the hopes that he writes himself across the board so that he's of value in the playoffs. And he's been decent in the playoffs before. So there's a track record there.
Yeah, you talk about 2020 bubble playoffs, I assume.
Yep.
So funny, I was going to bring that up. So we're going to kind of agree and disagree here. So I do agree that I think Fultz is still going to get point guard minutes. And this is obviously just an opportunity for him to play himself into a contract, be with us or somebody else really, obviously, but I think the front office and the coaching staff knows what they have with Anthony Black. And it's just all about, you know, he's there if you got to go to him, be it late in the regular season here or in the playoffs itself. And you know that he's going to like improve himself in the off season with the potential to be a pretty decent jump shooter, you know? So I think with Fultz, they want to give him the minutes to find out. And that might hurt us in a playoff series. However, also, if it does hurt us early on in a playoff series, then you definitively have your answer on Fultz. And then you can make adjustments and change a playoff series by making an adjustment, be it cutting the rotation down entirely or giving Anthony Black Markelle Fultz's minutes. Like there, we could see a similar thing with Wendell, you know, at center. Like you got Goga there sitting there. He's going to be a free agent in the offseason, you know. And if Wendell isn't doing what you want him to be doing, you can go to Mo, Wendell, you could go to Isaac, you could see Jonathan Isaac starting game is at center in the playoffs, you know, or getting a lot more minutes than what he has been. But with Markelle, I think the front office and the coaching staff wants to find out. And would it suck if it ends up hurting us in a first round series? Sure. But I think long-term, looking towards a championship in the next few years, I feel like I'm okay with figuring that out with finality. But, you know, you brought up the bubble, and I mean, Markelle's just not looking to shoot threes at all. I mean, there's plenty of screenshots and videos from the past few games of where like Paolo or Franz or Suggs should be passing to Fultz for a three or he's open somewhere and they're just not giving the ball, because you know, Markelle's not going to shoot it. He's going to go ISO ball and it may work out, but his shooting percentage is not good enough in the paint right now to justify getting him the ball that, you know, a lot. And that's the thing with Anthony Black, is I know he's at least going to shoot it. And with Markelle, my thing has been, I don't care if you shoot 25% from three, Markelle. I want you to shoot it if you're wide ass open. And we talk about
11% from three.
And like, if we talk about the bubble, like you look at the bubble series, I thought he should have been better in that Buck series. If you go but the interesting thing is he made at least one three in each of those five games. He shot, I think other than going 1 of 1 for 3 in game two, he took multiple threes in each of the other four games in that Buck series. And beyond game one, like game one, he shot over 50% from the field. Games 2 through 5, he shot below 50%. And that was a big reason why we didn't win another game, was because they just figured out Markelle. And he was doing that thing that he's doing now where there's just too many long stints and instances where he's kind of just coasting and just kind of out there. It's what hurt and held Elfrid Payton back, is just that lack of consistency. And if Markelle does this again, you know, late this regular season and or in the playoffs, Well, you have your answer as far as you can't offer him another contract, even if it's like $8 million or less. Like, you can't offer Markelle another contract. But we're going to find out. And look, I get it. Everybody loves Markelle. I am a big, big Markelle Fultz fan. I am. But if you're not even going to attempt shooting threes, you can't be an NBA player on a good team. Like, you can't be. And so, I don't know any other thoughts beyond that. Because look, with the Bucks series, because I mean, we needed him. We really did. Like, we're out there relying on like Gary Clark and shit like that. Because like Aaron Gordon's out, Fournier was out with a non-COVID thing, and then like just you needed Markelle. And I mean, I get it's a little unfair because that was Markelle's first real true like big stage situation, getting consistent minutes and all that. But I thought we'd get a little bit more from him. And I mean, he was okay, not like good in that Bucks series. And so that's my thoughts on that. And with a chance at the postseason, he'll do better than that. He might get that chance. He might not. It just depends on how these final few weeks of the regular season go. But yeah, your thoughts. I kind of rambled a bit.
I mean, I think it's an interesting point. I think it's half conspiracy theory and half I can jump on board with it in terms of how they're utilizing Markelle and what they're looking to gain from it. But in that salient point, my takeaway was back to the Mosley thing, which, you know, you're talking about maybe juggling both the point guard and the five spot in the playoffs. And it, like, if you look at the end of the Kings game, and really, we'll say to a fault, but really his coaching style for his entire tenure has been really to trust the guys that have gotten him to that point in the game, more or less. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how quick he will make a change versus letting guys kind of play through it and get that experience. And even game to game, if he'll make any wholesale changes with rotations or starting lineups or anything like that. Like, you know, the last offensive possession of the Kings game, on all of the offensive rebounds, like, seems like a prime time to call timeout and set something up. And that's something we haven't seen. I mean, from a lot of coaches recently too, Mazzulla sticks out in that regard as well. But, you know, a lot of it is delegated to the players they've earned the equity of being on the floor based on what they've done the first three quarters, or, you know, maybe the bench lineup had a good run, so they get to close the game. And in the playoffs, that doesn't always work the same way. So how agreeable will he be to kind of shift what he thinks and feels with regard to going to hot hands or pulling Anthony Black from the end of the bench and plugging him in for Markelle, you know, to start game three or something?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of opportunity to learn and grow from this. And I'll be pissed if we get knocked out, you know, whenever we get knocked out in the postseason, whatever, but like, be it first round or later. But I definitively am very thrilled and happy with where we are right now. And there are very few Magic seasons where I have been this content and happy going into postseason without much postseason expectations. Like, it's very, very rare in my fanhood, in our fanhood lives, really, at this point. So
it's beyond house money, even in a way where, you know, like 93, 94 or original Code Blue Pistons series, like, you know, it's fun to go in not as an 8 seed where you know you're going to most likely lose, but even still, to have no expectations and just enjoy the ride is certainly a unique place to be.
Yeah, I mean, look, if we get the 3rd or 4th seed and we go out like the 93-94 teams did in the first round, or like the 07-08 Magic team in the second round of the Pistons, like, it's going to be nice to just deal with this and be in this situation. Like, look, both teams learned a shit ton. And guess what? Both teams ended up going to the NBA Finals the next year. So I'm not saying that's going to happen with this team necessarily, but it's possible with how we've been improving. You know, I can't completely rule it out. There's a percentage of that being possible. But look, and the Magic, they've been good against top 10 teams in the league. Like, the Magic are 12-11 against the rest of the top 10. And that makes you a top 10 team with that record. And that's pretty great considering our experience, because we're being led by a 22 or 21 or 22 year old. You know, there's a list of 21-year-olds to average 22 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists in a season. It's Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Luka Doncic, and it's looking pretty good that Paolo Banchero is going to be the fourth guy on that list. That's fucking insane. And people can keep sleeping on this kid all they want. Like, they can keep him off the All-NBA third team or not make him like a clutch player of the year, a finalist. You know, that's fine. Keep sleeping on him because he has been unbelievable, is Paolo, and he's only going to get better. And the ego thing has not gotten to his head yet. It's not gotten to his head like it has for like an Anthony Edwards or something like that, or a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Like, Paolo is pretty grounded at this point, and I hope he can somehow remain like that. Mosley is starting to get more buzz for Coach of the Year. Like, it's looking like Mosley's going to be a Coach of the Year finalist at least. Dagnold at OKC is the heavy favorite. I think Mosley's actually second in front of Finch, which is interesting. I know Missoula's hovering around there because the Celtics have like an 8-game like better record than anyone else around them right now. But I don't know, Penny, if the Magic get to 48, 49, or even 50 wins, you think Mosley steals Coach of the Year, or is just Dagnold just such a heavy favorite? It's tough to overcome that.
Yeah, I think he's, I wouldn't be surprised if he finishes third, because there's going to be some splitting of the votes across the board where he might sneak in and kind of finish third. But the Western Conference, both the Timberwolves and the Thunder, I think, you know, in spite of what Boston's done, I feel like those surprise stories, probably one of those two win the day.
I think if we go 8-3 to finish the year and get to 50 wins, I think he wins Coach of the Year. Anything short of that, he'll finish. I think he'll finish top three, like second or third, but he wouldn't win it in that instance. 50's the number. But Suggs getting some defensive player of the year buzz, but especially all defensive first team. Do you think Suggs is a DPOY finalist? I don't think he's beating Rudy. Like, Gobert seems to be the very heavy favorite, and look, centers technically, shot blocking centers technically, definitely, you know, on paper and statistically impact games more than feisty guards. But I think Suggs might have all defensive first team locked up. And I think he'll finish. I think he might be like third in defensive player of the year voting. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's no way. I don't see any way that he wins defensive player of the year. I think he's deserving of all, you know, defensive first team. I think there's a chance he might slide to second just based on, we'll say, the ignorance of some of the voters. But the important thing and the nice thing is that come the next Magic game, when he rolls out in the lineup, that'll be number 65. So he is, you know, eligible and in the running for a deserved honor.
All right, man. That's all I got, man. Any final thoughts here, man, before we've still got four big games in this homestand. Yeah. I mean, what do you think, man? Where do you think we finish right now, if you had to pick in the East, man? What seed do you think we're going to end up? Like, yeah, what do you think?
If you're asking me today, I'm going to say conservatively in the fifth seed, but I'm not ruling out as high as three. I mean, I really think it's going to be 3, 4, 5. If you peg me to a seed today, I think I'd go fifth just on how much I've seen of the Knicks lately, and they're really looking pretty solid in spite of all the injuries. But God, I hope we buck the trend of laying an egg after multiple days off this week.
I think you're right. I think if you look at the scheduling, and then the Knicks have been really good, even without some big names missing, you know, I think the Knicks end up finishing third. I think, oh man, I hope I'm wrong, because like I said, I want to face the Heat or the Knicks, but I think you're right. I think we end up finishing fifth. Right now, I think we win the division. I think the Cavs, well, no, fuck it. No, we're taking fourth. I know. We take fourth, and I say actually, I'll say Cleveland ends up fifth, although it wouldn't shock me if the Heat, like, because the Heat schedule gets pretty favorable, if I'm right. I think Miami slots into five then if we're fourth, and I think I think Cleveland slips down to sixth is what I'm going to say. And I'm going to have like Pacers seventh, Sixers eighth, and we end up getting a first round series with Miami. But you know what? I don't mind being fifth. His fifth means that you play the first two on the road. Whatever jitters and shit play that might happen to us, you get that out of the way the first two games. And then you've got two games at home to really get rolling. And guess what? If you steal one of those first two games as a fifth seed on the road, you're a favorite all of a sudden. So being the fifth seed, not a bad spot to be. So I'll happily take fifth, but I'm going to say we're the fourth seed. So that's going to do it for this episode. If you're still listening, you know, we thank you very much for your time. We are the longest running Magic podcast show in existence, so any added support is much appreciated. Subscribing, rating the show highly, positive comments, they all help this podcast ranking immensely. Tweet us any of your questions and feedback. Penny, what's your Twitter handle?
At Spencer Strode.
No C's, just S's, and I'm at Papa Giorgio MBO. And with that, take care. Let's go Magic.